Africa, and indeed Southern Africa, drawn towards one of the few mining industries which has been expanding. So there is a huge concentration of social problems around these mines. It is an extremely explosive situation.
Al Jazeera's reporting safety remains a major concern for the mine workers who return to work. Apparently, intimidation, threats of violence have kept many more away. I wanted to turn to Lonmin's chief financial officer again, Simon Scott, who says people should return to work as soon as the situation gets under control.
With regard to our own employees, we have asked them to return to work. We understand that the situation is one where perhaps there is intimidation taking place, but as soon as that comes under control, and as soon as the South African police services, affect the situation so that the people aren't intimidated, they should return to work.
Who owns this mine, and what about the South African government's involvement here?
Okay, well, first of all, I'd just like to comment on Simon Scott. This, I think, represents really, it encapsulates the callousness of the mine bosses in South Africa. 34 people were massacred last week by the police. Another 10 have died in violence around that strike in the week leading up to that. That is 44 mine workers dead and up to 80 mine workers injured, and there may be more joining the dead. It's a tense and explosive situation. People are mourning. They're in shock. They have been victims of a massacre. This is not the time to be threatening people with losing their jobs if they don't return to work. And indeed, just to update you, the mine workers have stayed away. They've stayed strong. And as a result of this and the increasing political embarrassment of the government, pressure has now been put on Lonmin to sit down and not face non-returning mine workers with the sack. But the fact that they're even prepared that to do that at all under such circumstances, I think, tells a much bigger story.
I want to thank you, Vaben Kaps, for being with us, a professor at the University of Cape Town in South Africa. That does it for our show. Tune in next week, the next 2 weeks, for our 2 weeks of expanded two-hour daily coverage from the Republican and Democratic conventions called Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Monte, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Martinez DeRosta, and Nemo Allen, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Ahmed Abdelkaduz, Vesta Gadars. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Bob Longman from Sunday Afternoons 12:30, and this is the WUSB Concert Billboard for Tuesday, August 21st. At the Nikon at Jones Beach Theater in Wontaw, Kelly Clarkson and The Fray will be starting at 7 p.m. Jose El Canario Alberto, plus Ocho y Mas, and DJ Polito Vega will be at the East River Park in Manhattan, 7 p.m. Brian McGuff will be at Otto's Sea Grill in Freeport. And our own Mary Lamont and her band will be at the Lido Beach Town Park in Lido Beach over by Long Beach at 1:30 Tuesday through Friday. WUSB Concert Billboard for Wednesday, August 22nd. Lo-Fi 3, Calypsis, Nifty Breed, and Listen Close will be at the 89 North in Patchogue. Ahmad Ali will be at the Windmill on the Long Wharf at Sag Harbor at 4 p.m. Gene Casey and the Lone Sharks will be at the Harbor Front Park in Port Jefferson, 6:30 p.m. Taylor Barton and G.E. Smith will be at the Stephen Talkhouse in Amagansett at 8 p.m. Michael Duca will be at the 21 Main in Sayville, 6:30 p.m. David Ryan Harris will be at the Highline Ballroom in Manhattan, 8 p.m. Cindy Hazel and Toby Tobias will be at La Cucina in Hewlett at 7:30 p.m. Your billboard for Thursday, August 23rd. Joan Osborne will be doing a special acoustic show at the Stephen Talkhouse in Amagansett, and that's at 8 p.m. John Paul Keith and the 145s will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, starting at 8 p.m. down the tavern. At a Loss, Craving Strange, and Break Past Reason will be at the 89 North in Patchogue. Who Dosed will be at the Levitt Pavilion in Westport, Connecticut at 8 p.m. Anthony Raffa will be at Sorella's in Melville. and Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Star, plus Mamarazzi, Odetta Hartman, and the Himalaya will be at the East River Park in Manhattan. And take a good look at the weekend. We'll have Rusted Root over at the Paramount in Huntington at 8 on Friday. On Saturday, the Smithereens will be at the Fairfield Theater at Stage 1 in Fairfield, Connecticut at 8 p.m.
This has been today's Concert Billboard. Tune in each day to hear when your favorite performers are appearing at venues in the WUSB broadcast area. The online version of the Concert Billboard at WUSB.fm has an upcoming schedule months ahead, so you know what to look forward to. Look for the WUSB Concert Billboard group on Facebook. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
It's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. And time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. This is Emmanuel Goldstein with you on this Tuesday evening, where we discuss the events of the world, and I get to rant and rave about various things going on in my world, which don't necessarily coincide with things going on in the world you might know. It's quite therapeutic sometimes. You know, one thing happened to me this week that I got to rail about for just a couple of minutes, because it was just so absurd and so crazy. But it was a bit of fun. You know, it's Saturday afternoon, nice day. I figured, why not make a little trip to the local pet store, you know, to pick up a bag of cat food, because, well, it's time. You know, I occasionally have to do that. You get one of these big bags, and there are only a couple places left that you can go and get them. It used to be that there were local pet stores, then there were chain pet stores, then there were mega chain pet stores. And what I mean by that is they're the size of a supermarket. Have you been in one of these things? It's really unbelievable. They have aisles, multiple aisles. You know, I mean, it's of course, pet stores had aisles before, but maybe like three or four of them. They have 20, 25. It's like a supermarket. It's bigger than any grocery store overseas because they don't go for this whole mega thing that Americans love. But this is just for pets. And it's not even the kind of place where, you know, you can go and there's a whole reptile display and here are the tropical fish and you got the birds and the turtles and things like that. No, they don't even have that. These are just products of various sorts. And they have vets on call. Apparently you bring your little dog in there to get their nails done or something. You can do all that. And dogs are coming in. Dogs and well, that's really the only animal that comes in. Cats don't really go for this. I guess people can bring other animals in cages and tanks in as well. The point is, it's huge. And it's really the only place you can go to find what you're looking for because the other places have been driven out of business by these mega chains. It's unfortunate. Just like, you know, the bookstores, just like the hardware stores. And the real problem comes when these entities start having trouble and they go out of business and there's nothing left. And we're seeing that with bookstores, record stores, all kinds of outlets that are having difficulties now that things have changed a little bit. And suddenly the being independent is a whole lot more expensive and difficult. Now, of course, animals are always going to have to eat something, so I don't think pet stores are going to go away anytime soon unless someone figures out a way to digitally download pet food. But your choices are relatively few and far between. In fact, my choices basically were three different versions of the same store in different parts of town. Yeah, they compete against each other. That's the American way. So anyway, I'm in this store, and I'll say what it is. It's a Petco. Petco is the name of the mega chain. It's not even the biggest one anymore. That's what's scary. I don't know how big they can possibly get. But I'm inside this place, and I should have known right away something was wrong when I came inside and saw there was a line of about 25 people to get out. And I'm always curious. I don't usually just turn around and walk away from something. I usually walk towards it and to see what it is in the first place. In this particular occasion, I was pretty pretty intrigued, and so I found what I was looking for. Knew exactly where to go. Could have been out of there in 2 minutes, but it was not to be. They had. For all their size, they only have three checkout lanes, and they were only using one of them. And while I was on this line, I was number 26 online. I'm not kidding, either. There was all this discussion going on around. People were murmuring and saying what they heard and what they read and what they saw and what they overheard and what they overread and et cetera, et cetera. It turned out that word had it in the checkout line that the credit card computer was down, and they were only taking cash. And, you know, upon hearing that, one woman just dropped all of her groceries. Can you call them groceries when they're for animals? Yeah, I guess why not. And she just walked out the door. Did not want to be forced to pay cash. I didn't want to pay cash either. Wasn't sure I had enough, but you know, I had a whole speech like ready in my head of what I was going to say to the person when she said I could only pay cash. It would include things like, well, you know what? You don't have any signs up, all right? You don't have anybody walking around telling people these restrictions. You only are using one checkout line out of three and causing this tremendous backup. You know, I was basically trading, wasting time for making a good speech. And I think that's a worthy sacrifice. That's something you get tremendous satisfaction when you deliver a good speech. It's received well by the person you're delivering it to, and I was looking forward to that. So, again, you know, I was overhearing what was being said around me, but I was not acting on it because it was only hearsay. There were no signs anywhere, and that's another part of my speech. I was going to say this is where you should put the signs because they have these metallic poles that stick up for some reason by every register. That's a perfect place to put a sign saying, when you get here, you won't be able to pay with your credit card. And so wherever they did put a sign, which I could not find at all, I could only hear the murmuring of the crowd. Well, as it turns out, as in many occasions, the crowd was wrong. The information was based on rumor and hearsay, speculation, misinformation. There was nothing wrong with the credit card computer at all. The problem was with the scanning computer. Yes, they had lost the ability in this store. And according to what I overheard from some staff people, and I tend to take that with a few less grains of salt, they were saying that the entire Petco chain nationwide had lost the ability to scan products. I don't understand how that's even possible. I guess the database must have gotten corrupted or something with all their products in it. In other words, they could still scan things, but maybe there was nothing to look up. Maybe it got wiped somehow. Who knows? I'm sure some hacker is behind it. That's what they're going to say. But that's what the staff were saying, that there was no Petco anywhere on Saturday that could scan products. So what they had to do was walk up to all the customers, and it took them a very long time to do this, and find out what they were buying. And this especially took a long time for people that have multiple items. There was one poor person in front of me with must have been 25 different items in a shopping basket. These are concepts I just cannot grasp. A shopping basket inside a pet store and buying dozens of items. What do you... I guess it's just my old-fashioned upbringing. I should try to be a little bit more open-minded about these things. I guess you can go to a pet store and buy a lot of items, and why not use a shopping cart or a basket or whatever it is that they have on hand. But, you know, I just will never stop thinking that it's weird. That's just me, I guess. So, yeah, it took I'm not kidding. It took about 15 minutes for them to go through all the items in that person's basket, write them all down, and then go. So I guess they went to where they were on the shelf. They had to know where to go for every single item and then write down the price on a piece of paper next to the item number. I'm not kidding. They had to do all of this. It made Belarus look advanced. Let's put it that way. With all their bureaucracy and going back and forth with regulations and people shouting at you, this was unbelievably inefficient. And, you know, a lot of this could have been prevented. If this is actually a known risk, and even if it's not a known risk, it's a good idea to have on the... What, we're repeating the theme? Oh, the CD player's on repeat mode. You know, let it play again. Let it play again. It's comforting to have it in the background. And I never get to talk over this part. So, sure. I feel like I have to turn it up, though. Okay. So, this is a good reason why you really ought to have prices on the items themselves, like they used to do. Because, for one thing, what do you do if the price that you're charged does not match the price that was listed? You have very little way of proving this when you're at the checkout line. You can't remember every single price that you saw on the shelf. You can't remember that. But if it's there, if it's on a little a sticker on the actual product, then you know how much it's supposed to cost. And let's say you're at home and you're looking at something on your shelf. How much did I pay for this? Well, you don't have a UPC scanner. How are you going to know? We just sort of blindly accept this. Yeah, I guess you could keep your receipt and scotch tape it to the cupboard and access that whenever you need to. But that's no way to live. In any event, what wound up happening was they had to do this for every single person, every single item. They had to write it down, go to the back, find out what the price was, write that down, give it to the person. You went to the register, handed them a piece of paper. They looked at it, typed all that information in, and you were off on your way. Well, not before being asked if you wanted a Petco card so that you could get updates on all kinds of fun things when their computers are going to be up again and I guess be part of some kind of support group that meets afterwards. So, you know, it just makes me realize how tenuous it all is, how things can just fall apart so quickly with the failure of one computer file someplace in some remote part of the country. And the other thing that struck me was how patient everybody was. Nobody was complaining. Nobody was complaining. I wasn't complaining. I was just watching to see how bad it would get. You know, I could have just walked out of there. Of course, the only other places I could have gone were other branches of the same chain, and they probably had the same problem. I just picked the worst possible day to do what I wanted to do. But I could have just done it a different day, but I wanted to stick around to sort of ride it out and see where it went. That's kind of what I do. Always curious about these things. Makes me walk down the wrong street sometimes and get closer to the storm instead of further from it. But you wind up with some interesting stories and experiences and revelations. So anyway, I also realized that that system isn't really that secure. If I had been walking around with the same kind of Post-it notes that they were using, could have written the price of my choice for anything in the store. It would have been pretty simple. I assume they got it fixed by now. If not, then I imagine there's a whole convoy of cars on their way over to the local Petco. All right, enough about that. We've got other things to talk about. Okay, this guy, Todd Akin, where do these people come from? You hear about this? This is the guy that, for some reason, during an interview, and this is why it's always a good idea to interview politicians, because you never know what they're going to say. You never know how deeply they're going to stick their foot in it. But, wow. This guy, Todd Akin, was running for the Missouri Senate race. He's already a representative. He's already in the House of Representatives. That's not good enough for him. He wants to be a senator now. Probably not going to happen because of this interview that that he had the other day, where he made some remarks. For some reason, he decided he was going to weigh in on the issue of rape. And basically say that we have the exact quote here. This is what he said concerning a rape victim's chances of becoming pregnant. I guess this all ties into the abortion debate, which we're still having. Oh my God, we just never get past it, do we? 100 years from now, can somebody listening to the show 100 years from now just remark on the fact in some public forum, if they still exist, whether or not we ever got past it. If there is still America, you know, the country, United States, if we're still around, have we gotten past debating the whole abortion issue? Somehow, I think the answer is no. But anyway, what he wound up saying, what this genius, Todd Akin, wound up saying, if it's a legitimate rape, and right away, a phrase like that, you know, you start a sentence with a phrase like, if it's a legitimate rape, you know, you put down whatever it is you're doing to hear how that sentence is going to turn out, because it's going to be a doozy. So, here we go. Get on the ride and buckle up. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down. Basically, pontificating on the notion that if a woman is assaulted and raped, that something inside of her will prevent her from becoming pregnant. So therefore, there's no need for people who claim to have been raped to have abortions because, well, that's God's plan does not allow for that. Basically, I think that's the mindset here. I just, you know, what goes... You could not write better material. All right? If somebody from the most liberal party there is in this country. Who is that anyway? It's not the Democrats, that's for sure. It's not even the Greens. I don't know who it is. But somebody who really wanted to topple these guys, if they had somehow been able to possess their bodies and make them say whatever it is they wanted to say for 24 hours, they could not have topped this. No way they could have topped this. So whatever he was smoking, he basically catapulted his career right out of reality. Monday, he apologized, said he made a very, very serious error. Nevertheless, he has insisted that he's going to stay in the race. Now, everybody wants him out of the race. Mitt Romney has said he wants him out of the race. The Republican National Committee people, they want him out of the race. Of course, the Democrats want him out of the race, but they always wanted him out of the race. Basically, there's very few people standing up for him at this point. Yeah, here it is. The National Republican Senatorial Committee, the NRSC. Doesn't that... Yeah, that makes me think of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the NRSC. National Republican Senatorial Committee. Probably a lot of the same people on it. They said yesterday that they would no longer financially support his Senate bid if he chooses to stay in the race. And they are now campaigning against him as if he were a member of the opposite party. Alerting the media to the negative attention that he's getting. Yeah, because if Missouri is swayed, that's detrimental to the Republicans' chances of taking over the Senate. I can't believe they even have a chance of taking over the Senate, but apparently they do. Because we are so dead to reality that we think, or some of us think, that Republicans might be the way to go. They've been the way to go for so long. Let's go a different way. This is just one example of the way they tend to go. And I guess it's progress of a sort that they're so quick to condemn it. But it is something that, if it's not something that the candidates themselves say very frequently, it is certainly something that many of their supporters say. And maybe it's hinted at, maybe it's something that... they just don't say out loud, but they give a wink and a nod, and yeah, you guys are okay. I'm standing up for you, standing up for your beliefs, your value system. So that's why Missouri is important. It could actually decide which way Senate goes, and Missouri is also important as far as the presidential election as well, as is every state, not necessarily every person. But certainly every state. And yeah, you know, there isn't a great deal of difference between Democrats and Republicans, but I would find it very, very amazing if I heard somebody in the Democratic Party say something like this, something this brain dead. So, wow. Okay. Unreal. You know, the reason I'm a bit confused here, because I'm reading where today is the deadline for him to get out of the race. I'm going to go over to Google News here. If you just bear with me for a moment. Okay, there we go. And I'm going to type his name in. Okay, here we go. The headline is Romney says Aiken should exit Missouri's Senate race. Obama won't back down over Aiken's rape comments? What? I don't understand that. Okay, why does he have to back down exactly? I'm waiting for it to load. I'm sorry. This, for some reason, takes... Okay, I didn't ask you. You know, I hate this. I should be able to find websites when they play audio and video without my permission. I did not ask that. I asked for a news story. You know what? I'm going to close this now because I just got so infuriated by it. Thank you, Google News. All right. Let's try something else. According to this, Aiken refuses to quit Senate race over rape comments. Representative Tyson under fire for controversial remarks on abortion and rape insisted on Tuesday he would not leave the Missouri Senate race despite pressure from fellow Republicans and talk of who might replace him on the November 6th ballot. Now, this story was filed only 13 minutes ago, so I imagine he missed a deadline to withdraw. Yeah. Aiken, a staunch abortion opponent, vowed to stay in the contest against Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill, indicating he represents a conservative movement that must be heard. Well, I think he does represent a conservative movement. I think what he said is indicative of what many people in the conservative movement in this country believe. So, you know, I'm in favor of him staying in the race. I really am, because at least now it's out in the open. And we won't be electing people who believe this crap, who represent people who believe this crap. and everybody gets away with it. You know, it's oh, you know, I can't listen to that a third time. Can we just thank you? Yes. yeah, twice is my limit for the theme. Okay, I'm sorry. So, he says, we are going to continue in this race for U.S. Senate. That's funny how he's using the plural there. He's probably the only person doing it. He said this on the Mike Huckabee show. There's a Mike Huckabee show? Really? I didn't. It's not on this station. Is it on this station? I don't listen in the middle of the night. All right, well, maybe it's on this station. I don't know. The Mike Huckabee show. I mean, right away, just the sound of that. Yeah, I know. He was running for president, too. That's also kind of crazy. Okay, it's a radio program that obviously hosted by the former Arkansas governor, who is an Aiken supporter and a favorite of religious conservatives. And they're a sizable bunch, and they're a loud bunch, too. And they're a bunch that get far too much representation as opposed to a lot of other people who get no representation. All right, so it looks like he did not make the deadline. He's staying in the race. And that is according to Reuters, I believe. Let us just reload this page, see if anything has changed. It's they're in Central Time, right? So it's 5:28 their time. And I imagine the deadline was probably 5 p.m., right? So, yeah, so that means, okay, we're stuck with him. It's going to be an interesting race. It's going to be really interesting. So it's, you know, I'm used to seeing the people to the left of center in factions and fighting against each other. It's kind of refreshing to see that happen with Republicans. Doesn't happen often, but it's happening now. So we'll see where that goes. All right. I'm also going to check this. I'm sorry. I just like to check this whenever I use a browser to see if anybody left their... Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Someone always leaves their Gmail logged in. It is the biggest security hole ever when people use Gmail on computers that they don't control, because they are always leaving them logged in, and they don't know it. They don't know. It's very transparent. Google tries to get you to just make it part of your browser in the first place, and they would be happy if you were always logged in, so that every search was recorded, every keystroke, no matter what you did, somehow was matched up with an ad that matched whoever it is that you are. And this one matches up to an ad about being a musician and winning free gear and possibly $250,000. I might click on that ad because that's very interesting. And that's based on the email of this person that... am I breaking the law right now? Because all I did was type in gmail.com and it loaded this mailbox. I'm not going to give out the name. I could embarrass somebody on the radio station. Every week, though, it's somebody else. Every week, somebody else leaves their Gmail logged in here. And I imagine if you work in an establishment at a school or even an internet cafe, you can probably just go on Gmail on the browser, go to gmail.com, and it'll just automatically load their mailbox because they never logged out. And, you know, there are cases. There's a case, in fact, in New Jersey. We talked about this on Off the Hook a couple of weeks ago, where somebody, it was a teacher, actually, basically did what I'm doing right now. Somebody was left a terminal, walked away from it, and he happened to see that they were logged in. I don't know if it was Gmail or some other mail client. He saw that they were still logged in, and he started perusing the titles, and he noticed that one of them was about him. And so he read it. And then there was a whole big lawsuit about whether he had the right to do that. Turns out he did. Because the person, by leaving the account logged in, was basically giving permission. And he didn't access it. He simply read something that was in front of him. Accessing it means you get the password, you type it in, and you have a motive. But this is just something that basically fell in front of your eyes. It's like somebody dropping a notebook and you reading it. And I'm looking now to see if there's any messages about me. And I'll tell you what, if I see a message about me, I might just click on it right here live on the air. This will be an interesting case study, wouldn't it? Because once you bring the radio into it, then all of a sudden it's... No, I don't see anything here. Okay. I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to log this person out and not even leave an obnoxious message, which I could do. Yeah. who knows what the next person on the air might do to this account. So I'm going to log you out, and let's hope this doesn't happen again. Okay, they're safe now. Wow. Yeah, check out any computers in your office or other. Oh, come on, Facebook too? You left your Facebook account. This is too much. Oh, wow. Okay, I'll log this one out to this time only. Can you imagine the trouble that you can get somebody into? Log that out. Wow. Tell me there's not a Twitter window open. Please tell me that, because I don't know if I can resist. Okay. I have to do a show here. I have to get back to what I was talking about. Yeah, we have something more interesting to talk about. I might make a fool of myself right away by pronouncing it wrong, but the Bellewitt College, they're in the town of Bellewitt, Wisconsin. It could be Beloit for all I know, but I'm going to say Bellewitt. It's spelled B-E-L-O-I-T. Once a year, they put out something known as the Mindset List. And what that is, basically, is it's a list of items that you might be surprised to hear. It's something that is geared at students who are entering college for the first time this year and what their perspective on the world is. So you might be surprised to hear some of the things that people entering college, not kindergarten, not grade school, not junior high or high school, no, college. These folks are pretty much grown up. Their perspective, what they have experienced, what they have not experienced. And it's always quite interesting. They've been doing this, I think, since 2002. And every year it's more shocking. Okay, let's listen to a couple of these. I don't understand the first one. They should keep their eyes open for Justin Bieber or Dakota Fanning at freshman orientation. Okay, you know, it's fine. They have always lived in cyberspace, addicted to a new generation of electronic narcotics. All right, yes, I suppose that's true. Computers have always been around. They were born in 1994, after all, so yeah, it's not too hard to realize that. The biblical sources of terms such as forbidden fruit, the writing on the wall, Good Samaritan, and the Promised Land are unknown to most of them. Michael Jackson's family, not the Kennedys, constitutes American royalty. If they miss The Daily Show, they can always get their news on YouTube. Bill Clinton is a senior statesman of whose presidency they have little knowledge. They have never seen an airplane ticket. On TV and in films, the ditzy dumb blonde female generally has been replaced by a couple of dumb and dumber males. Their folks have never gazed with pride on a new set of bound encyclopedias on the bookshelf. They can't picture people actually carrying luggage through airports rather than rolling it. That's different. I didn't know that was invented only the last 16 or 17 years. Wow, okay. Here's an interesting one. There's always been football in Jacksonville, Florida, but never in Los Angeles. How about that? They have lived in an era of instant stardom and self-proclaimed celebrities famous for being famous. Women have always piloted warplanes and space shuttles. There have always been blue M&Ms, but no tan ones. Oh, wow, really? College freshmen don't know about the tan M&Ms. Wow, that is something. Billy Graham is as familiar to them as Otto Graham was to their parents. I have no idea who Otto Graham is, so I don't know where that puts me. Slavery has always been unconstitutional in Mississippi, and Southern Baptists have always been apologizing for supporting it in the first place. Gene therapy has always been an available treatment. And this is just, they're just being wise guys here. They were telling to enjoy the 1994 World Series, but then no one else got to enjoy it either. I guess they were on strike, right? Or was that just a very bad World Series? I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was a strike. There has always been a World Trade Organization. They grew up somehow without the benefits of Romper Room. They canceled Romper Room. I didn't know that. Mr. Burns has replaced J.R. Ewing as the most shot-at man on American television. They've always enjoyed school and summer camp memories with a digital yearbook. Point-and-shoot cameras are so last millennium. Oh, this one's kind of scary and sad, too, at the same time. Pulp Fiction's meal of a Royale with cheese and an Amos and Andy milkshake has little or no resonance with them. That is something. That is scary. The Sistine Chapel ceiling has always been brighter and cleaner. And the Lou Gehrig record for most consecutive baseball games played has never stood in their lifetimes. How about that? And the final one I'm going to read, there's actually 75 of these, but I'm not going to go through all of them. Despite being preferred urban gathering places, two-thirds of the independent bookstores in the United States have closed for good during their lifetimes. Wow. That is sad, and that is indicative of where we're heading. So that is the list, the mindset list, as released by Bellewitt College of Wisconsin, I guess every year at this time, before the school term begins. All right. And what else has been going on? Julian Assange, of course. We saw what took place in the last week when he was granted asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. And it's a very interesting case because the British authorities have surrounded the embassy, which is not really a big embassy. It's kind of part of a building. I think they share it with Colombia. They don't have their own driveway, so there's no way he could just be ushered into a car and driven to the airport. He'd have to go out onto the street, and they're ready to pounce on him the moment he does that. Now, Julian Assange is, of course, trying to avoid being extradited to Sweden to answer charges of sex-related crimes of various sorts, which is also interesting in and of itself because the charges that he is accused of, actually, he has not actually been charged. They want to question him. And the particular offenses that they want to question him about are not offenses in other countries. Sweden has a very low tolerance for anything they consider to be rape. But this is something that, say, in England, would not constitute a crime. I won't get into the particulars. I think we've talked enough about rape in the last few minutes, but it's interesting reading to see what the differences in law are. And maybe we need to update the way we do things here. Maybe Sweden's got it right. But one fact remains, Sweden is pretty unique in this. And the charges are something that he would not have been charged with in many other countries. And I'm fairly certain England is one of them. So I just find it rather odd that, or maybe it's not so odd, that the British authorities are so intent on making sure that he is extradited to Sweden. For what they would normally consider to be non-charges in their own country. And even in Sweden, they're not particularly serious charges. It's not the kind of thing that gets you locked up for years. It's more like a fine, maybe a short sentence, but not considered a dangerous criminal or a violent criminal or anything like that. And it's kind of disturbing to me to see the word rape being thrown around here as if it were the same thing as an act of violence, which nobody is alleging in this particular case. So it's easy to say that he's a wanted rapist, but it's not quite accurate. There's a big asterisk there that you really need to read the actual definitions according to Swedish law, according to what it is that they want to question him about. And why they can't question him where he is now or where he was before, that's beyond me as well. Seems they're very intent on getting him to Sweden. Now, okay, that's fine. You know, the British authorities, they want to follow the law. They want to carry it out as accurately, as diligently as possible. But it's not the way they usually do things. And all you have to do is look at history a little bit to realize that this is unusual. The way they are behaving is very unusual. First of all, if somebody else was a bail offender, and that's what he is accused of right now in England, his offense is basically not living up to the terms of his bail. And that's why he's subject to arrest under British law, not because of the charges in Sweden, because he violated the rules that said he was going to check in, he was going to surrender himself, et cetera, et cetera. Didn't do that. Okay, now you're a bail offender. If every bail offender in England got this kind of police attention, there would be no police left. And many of the bail offenders are accused of crimes much worse than what Julian has been accused of. So right away, the attention that he is getting is very imbalanced. Now, you can say because of all the publicity, but that's not really the way a police force should dictate how they respond to one person over another, because there's more publicity in this case or not. But let's go back and look at history a little bit. Let's go back to 1984. The scene is also London. The scene is also an embassy. This embassy belonging to Libya. There was a demonstration, an anti-Libya demonstration going on outside the embassy. And the people inside the embassy were not too thrilled about that. Somebody inside the embassy actually started firing shots at the crowd from inside the embassy. Yeah, this happened, 1984. Oh, it gets worse. It gets much worse. A British police officer named Yvonne Fletcher was fatally shot by somebody inside the Libyan embassy. I would say that is something that is miles above what we're looking at right now with Julian Assange sitting in the Ecuadorian embassy. So what wound up happening was the embassy stormed like they're threatening to do the Ecuadorians, which was the dumbest thing I think the British authorities could have possibly said, saying that they would simply make the building no longer an embassy and then they'd have the right to go in there and arrest Julian Assange. Now, instead, the way they resolved this, they did surround the building for a little while. But they allowed the entire staff of the Libyan embassy to leave the country without being questioned, without being charged. They let a murderer just walk away. So that alone tells you that the reaction is disproportionate. And there must be something else at play here. Not just publicity. There's got to be something else happening. Now, a good question. This is the best question that people who say what I'm implying is nonsense, this is the best question they've come up with. And that is, well, why wouldn't England simply hand them over to the American authorities? England has a much closer relationship to the United States than Sweden does as far as extraditing people. We simply have to look at the Richard O'Dwyer case, the kid accused of running a website that linked to pirated movies, apparently. Wasn't even a crime in England, but the British authorities have agreed to hand him over to the United States for prosecution in a country he wasn't even in. So, yeah, the Brits don't usually have a problem with this kind of thing. So why wouldn't they simply hand over Julian Assange? And you know what? That's a good question. And I'm sure there's an answer to it. I haven't figured out the answer yet. Maybe it's got something to do with appearances or just not wanting to be in the middle of it, Good job there. But obviously, being so intent on getting him to Sweden to face these charges and putting so much effort into that, and add to that what the Ecuadorian officials and what Julian's lawyers and what Julian himself has been asking for well over a year now. Can we get a guarantee, a written guarantee of some sort from the countries at work here, the United States, United Kingdom, Sweden, that Julian Assange will not be extradited to the United States once he is in captivity in Sweden? And nobody will do that. Nobody will give him that guarantee. And I don't care what the reasoning is. Oh, that's not the kind of thing we do. We don't comment on these matters. Whatever nonsense they spout, that is a way to resolve this. And if they continue to be unwilling to do this, then there is more at play here. There's no question about that. I'm not going to get into whether the whole thing is a conspiracy, because that's going into it a bit too deeply on things I really don't know. But the charges have served their purpose. They certainly have fractured his supporters, made people second guess whether or not he actually is worthy of their support. And yeah, you know, I think everybody has doubt of some sort based on that. But you have to counter that with the way the authorities are behaving, and it's very cagey. And we have to remember that that's how they do business. They don't let you know what's up until it's too late. And then once they do strike, they'll say, well, you know, we had to do it this way because, well, it was the only way to do it and maintain national security, et cetera, things like that. And before you know it, the majority of people are following them and saying, yeah, they were right, and they got away with it. And, you know, there are all kinds of examples that we can look at of things that should not have happened. Examples of people being taken from countries and put in this country to face charges. But usually they're not the kind of people that most of us will defend. People like Manuel Noriega, for instance, dictator of Panama, who was brought to prison in Miami. I don't think he was ever in Miami or the United States, was he? Maybe he was trained here, I don't know. But point is, he should have been tried in his own country by his own people, but he wasn't. The United States came in and took him out and put him on trial here. We have Guantanamo Bay, which in and of itself should not exist. It should be part of a sovereign nation known as Cuba. But of course, we don't allow them the same things that we allow the rest of the world. And we maintain a military base there. And now we have a prison camp there for people who we decide from wherever it is in the world that we take them from. This is where they're going to wind up without trial for as long as we say so. And that would not have been acceptable 20 years ago, but it is now. Invading countries and toppling governments, it's something that we've been doing a lot of over the decades. But with every passing administration, it seems that we just accept it more and more. And, you know, it's gotten to the point, we're looking at the Syrian situation now. And the latest words on those came from Obama a couple of days ago, where he was saying that if we see indications that Syria is moving chemical weapons or using chemical weapons against their people, that we would consider military action. Not exactly those words, but words to that effect. And I have to say, I have to admit to myself, you know, there's a lot more justification for moving militarily in Syria than there was in Iraq. Because here you have a situation where a government has gone mad and is massacring its citizens and basically just putting everybody through terror. Yeah, we'd be better off without them, for sure. Much, much more justification than Afghanistan or Iraq or so many other military adventures. I find myself thinking that. And, you know, I have to check myself and realize, you know, we're not the cops of the world. I mean, Phil Oakes would disagree, but we are people that seem to get involved in every single skirmish, every single uprising. And we wonder, when it all explodes in our face, sometimes literally, that how did this happen? How did we get there? So these things need to be dealt with, certainly. They can't be ignored. You can't let people suffer and be massacred. But it's not up to the United States to do it. It's not up to any one country. It's up to the world body in whatever organization that you see fit to support, whether that be NATO, whether that be the United Nations, whether that be all kinds of economic pressures that are put on so-called offenders. But it's not up to one country, one entity. And we can never seem to quite get that. So the situation in Syria, I think it's going to be changing pretty soon in ways that either will make things better or make things worse. Remember, a lot of the people who are opposing Assad are religious fundamentalists, the very same people that were fighting in different countries. So how does that work exactly? Now, just today, there was a report on BBC about Syria's deputy prime minister saying that the government is now prepared to discuss the exit of Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, but that the president's resignation cannot be a precondition for talks. Now, that's interesting. And, you know, I think maybe we should think, what is the best thing for Assad to do at this point? I imagine he's run out of ideas and he is looking for some dignified way out. Well, that train might have already left the station. He might not get his dignity. He might have to run for his life at this point, like Gaddafi tried to do. But something obviously has to change. There is no way he is holding on to power. No way. It's not going to happen. The one remaining issue, it's a rather a big issue with Syria, and probably why we haven't already sent troops in, is how Russia would react to this, and China too to a degree, but mostly Russia, and how increasingly alienated the Russians are getting, and how this could basically put us more in opposition with them than we have been in quite a long time. And do we really want to go down that road again? That's something to ponder. Oh, look at that. We're out of time. How did that happen? I just feel like I'm just beginning. So much more that we had to discuss today. Well, in any event, if you would like to be part of the discussion, please write to us, otw@2600.com. We love reading your letters, whether they're filled with bad words or insults or indignation or whatever, or whether they're filled with praise and high fives and things like that. Yeah, by all means, write to us, otw@2600.com. If nothing else, so that you can say you wrote something that was a bit longer than a tweet. That's always a good thing. All right, folks, that's it for me. We'll see you again next week. Have a good night.
Dedicated to the radio, not he or she. Because it's time for them to get recognized. This is my version of the Nobel Peace Prize. That's why I'm coming out my face like this. Far as negativity, you never get this. If it wasn't for you, nobody would know. That's why this is Simple Radio. To the radio DJs to play all the hits on
on 7 days. And even on the weekends, the DJs will be freaking, without a doubt, because everyone is unique. And the way they cut the records and be talking, it sounds too extra crazy deaf on a Walkman. To all the disc jockeys that's on the go,
this is 7 for the radio. Requesting my records on the radio, greatly appreciate what you've done for me. And my reward to you is my MUSIC. Straight up, I make the music just for you, so you can do the extra crazy Bismarck dance too, or even do the dance made up by yourself, as long as you use your good physical health. Because you're the one to make the radio hype, like fresh tobacco and a brand new pipe. Our program director always pick the right hits, like putting some salt and pepper and butter on grits. I always look up the program directors, cause they're the ones that jam selected. A couple of years ago when I didn't have a record playing on the radio, I thought to myself, saying, if I ever get the chance to play on my stuff, I'm gonna make everything extra tough. Cause radio will last to infinity, as long as my name is the B-I-Z, Ebba's the A-R-K, and I'm here to say, number one entertainment source in the like USA. Cause if it wasn't for you, nobody would know. That's why this is something for the radio.